Well, good day and welcome to another episode, a special episode segment here at the Disaster Podcast. As you can hear, that is Dr. Joe Holly's phone going off. And I think that's been part of his issue the last couple of weeks is he's just like busy as heck, as evidenced by the phone going off.
Hey, Joe and Sam. Awake,
and we've got a COVID update for you guys. And this is not as humorous as the beginning of this has been. There's a lot of serious stuff going on. So I'll bring Sam in here and then we'll get Joe on the line. Sam, what's up with you?
Oh my God. Well, first the county puts us on lockdown, then the state does, which few people seem to be paying attention to. So I'm coming back from the grocery store and there's an active shooter about four streets away. Not sure if they, I know they were doing flashbangs, so I don't know what the outcome was, but I'm sure I'll learn about it later tonight. So just an ordinary day in Loveland. how are things, I'm curious, are the other areas, you know, is it a recommendation to stay at home or are they mandating it?
When here in Maryland, it's not a lockdown like some other states around us. However, the governor has been pretty on daily saying, don't go out unless you have to go out. And I actually have seen, you know, in the area I'm in, that traffic on the roads is light. Traffic in town is light. People are going to the grocery store and stuff like that in the pharmacy. But a lot of businesses, restaurants and stuff are closed as the governor ordered. And so there's not a lot of reason to be out and about unless you're having to go to work.
Well, that would make sense. Becky, how is it in Pennsylvania?
It's fairly quiet. We have non-essential businesses are all closed. So pretty much everyone is working from home unless they are considered essential. And people are only going out if they have to pick up food or prescriptions or something like that. So it's fairly quiet. A lot of people out and about walking. So it still seems fairly normal, but it's obviously not. It's a little weird.
Well, the only weather note we're going to cover is it's going to snow here tomorrow. So just thought you'd like to know that. But Dr. Joe, I sent you a video that had some interesting information, but of course I like to verify that information before I, you know, spread it around. And you took issue with a few of those things, but I thought they were very interesting. First of all, that the COVID virus does not like heat.
Well, so hi, Sam, and guys. Good to talk to you tonight. Yes, so this video that you sent said that you should drink lots of warm water. I sort of took issue with that. It's not that the virus is not heat labile, but you got to get it hot enough to kill it. And if you drink that, you're going to kill your tongue. So, you know, the idea that warm water is going to make a difference was, I found, a little bit far-reaching. You know, nothing wrong with drinking lots of water, but drink lots of water because you need to be hydrated, not because the warmth of the water is going to kill the virus, because it's not.
Well, it made a point that you shouldn't let your mucous membranes in your mouth get dry. Therefore, the other reason for drinking lots of water. Would you agree that that's any kind of issue?
Yeah, I think there probably is some legitimacy there. You know, the mucous membranes need to be moisturized to function correctly and to produce a little bit of the barrier that hopefully helps the virus from being able to get into your bloodstream. So, you know, that part, sure. How much that really makes a difference is a little bit hard to tell, but I won't disagree that there's probably a little something there.
What about, I also learned that fibrosis can be a part of this, where we're hearing a lot about pneumonia, but not so much fibrosis. That's a pretty serious situation.
I mean, fibrosis is more of a scarring sort of phenomena that tends to be a long-term sequela. I don't know that I specifically agree that fibrosis is what's happening. I think these folks are getting a viral pneumonia, which generates lots of mucus and blood cells and leaky capillaries and fills up the alveoli. And then, you know, as that heals, that sometimes scars down just like it does in your body. And that is fibrosis. The issue is that most folks who have a severe pneumonia likely to lead to fibrosis don't survive the pneumonia to get the fibrosis. So, you know, the fibrosis is sort of part of the healing process down the road, not the cause of your death generally.
Wow, that's really interesting. So I'll hold out for the fibrosis. Maybe there's good news in there.
That's much well, better. Totally agree.
We lost our first person in town here, an older woman in a nursing home, and everybody knew the exact process of who infected who and how that all happened. So that's kind of what happens in small towns. But well, Becky, go ahead, Joe.
I think there's a couple of interesting points there. And it has to do with several of the comments that a bunch of folks have made. And that is, if you look at the epidemiology currently, it looks like about 45% of the spread of the virus, meaning newly infected people, are occurring in the 29 to 55 age group, meaning young people, which is clearly the highest likelihood vector for spreading the pandemic. And thus the social distancing, stay at home kind of stuff, which is pretty common across the country right now. And I thought it was worth making a couple of points there. You know, there's nothing special about being in your home. And the idea that you get out and go to the grocery store, obviously those things are essential and you have to do them. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking a walk around the neighborhood with your dog. That's not the social distancing and the stay-at-home mantra is really much more about attempting to not be close to someone else to stop the spread of the virus. And if you look at a lot of the mathematical modeling around the spread of this virus currently, think back about 10 days ago when Seattle was early in their outbreak and instituted some fairly rigorous business closures. They closed down downtown. They stopped mass transit stuff downtown. You know, I mean, they really sort of turned downtown into a ghost town, quote unquote, with some fairly aggressive social activities to attempt to keep people apart from each other. And if you look at the mathematical modeling, it's pretty clear that in order to stop this pandemic, we need about 65% social distancing, whatever that means. It's just a number, right? I don't know what that means, but 65%. The mathematical model implied that the effect of the activities in that were enacted in Seattle were worth about 35%. So the point is the social distancing thing is it really takes a lot of work to do and is an awful lot of work, so nothing will happen. And I think that's part of the challenge with these social distancing ideas and stay-at-home stuff is that, you know, everybody tries to do the right thing, and then they go, oh, well, nothing happened. What was the point? Well, that was the point. Nothing will happen. So, you know, there's sort of no positive feedback for doing the right thing. If you did the right thing, then nothing happened. And so it's hard, I think, for people to appreciate that on a large sort of, you know, global, quote-unquote, scale, a large population kind of scale, that people think that something is supposed to happen when they do all these things and then sort of, well, it's still growing and et cetera, right? Well, the growth rate went from doubling every 24 hours to doubling every 4 days. That is a dramatic change. And it's hard, I think, for people to appreciate those kind of numbers and what they mean, and that those numbers are a result of social distancing and, you know, doing the right thing, et cetera.
Well, the right thing is you won't get sick, nor will your family. I think that's pretty good right there. And I was going to walk the dog today, but people with big guns were running around the street, so that didn't happen. Becky, you got some questions for Joe on this note before we wind up here?
Hard to know where to start. I guess I'll just touch on, I think we're probably all aware that the U.S. just crossed a pretty critical threshold and are now the number one country for the most cases. Can you speak at all? Oh, go ahead. I was just going to ask, like, is that symptomatic of, is that related to population? Like, China obviously has a significant population, and now we have more total cases than they do. Like, do you have any sense of what's causing the U.S. to have so many numbers? Is it probably related to what you just spoke about, actually?
Yeah, I think you're right. That is part of it. China was very aggressive in their social distancing measures, meaning we will take you to jail and lock you up if you don't stay home. That's not quite as realistic in the U.S. I guess the real point here is it's a very multifactorial issue, right? I think we are now testing much greater numbers of folks than we did. I don't have a good sense of how widespread testing was in China. And how that compares to how widespread it is in the U.S. So, you know, the total numbers are concerning for sure. What the total numbers really mean is that we are the greater the total number gets, then the greater the number of that 15% of those that are going to require hospitalization and inpatient care, and that 5-ish percent that are going to die. So clearly, the bigger the overall number, the more, you know, the more 5% means. And so I think that's part of what we're seeing here. It's been very interesting that I think one of the things that's important for folks to hear is pretty much every community so far, and so right now, our bellwethers are New York, Seattle, California, where the most intense outbreaks are, although like Illinois or Indiana is not very far behind right now. They've got a big outbreak going on. A lot of those places saw a 10 or 15% reduction in ED visits and 911 calls and things like that in the week or 10 days before the tsunami hit. So it makes me think of that picture of the massive tsunami in the Pacific several years ago, where you saw suddenly the beach was 2 miles wide, and it's like, where'd all the water go? And all of a sudden, here comes the tsunami, right, and washes 120,000 people away. I think New York and Seattle are on that wave right now, and for the rest of the country, almost all of whom are seeing decreases in their EMS run volume, their ED volume, et cetera, my statement to them would be, wait about another week or 10 days, the wave is coming. So to me, it's a strong warning to the rest of us. We've got about a week to get our act together and get going, because we're going to be getting hit pretty hard.
Well, I got to give Kaiser credit, and this was the doctor's office, not a hospital. They have an entire triage tent set out. They have an intake area. You know, I'm glad to see that this preparation is going on. Well, we're going to be talking to Joe again in the next few days. He's got some new information coming in. But for now, Jamie, I'm going to throw it back to you for comments and closing.
No, just like you said, this is kind of an update. It's not going to be a full episode. And we only going to talk for like 10 minutes, and we went a little longer than that, which is what we do. But that's good. We need to get the information out there, and Joe will be checking in periodically with me and Sam, and we will get on a call and bring you updates as Joe gets them so that you can get the most up-to-date information here as a listener to the show or a member of our Facebook group where we'll cross-post all of this information. So stay tuned, keep in touch, and Joe and Sam and I and maybe Becky or Kyle or whoever else we can get on will come back with some updates midweek in addition to our regular weekly podcast episodes, which we have coming up. So stay tuned for all of that, and we'll be back soon.